It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Friends and wrong show. Welcome back to another episode of Access of Easy. This is number 307. As always, I'm Joey. That's Len. This is the audio companion to the weekly Access of Easy newsletter. You can subscribe to that newsletter free of charge on the house, accessofeasy.com. And if you sign up, you get a couple of bucks off your next Easy DNS purchase, which is great. Len, we got five stories today. But before we get into it, how are you doing? What's going on over there? We're both wearing, you asked me before we got on air if we're cold. I am cold. I'm in my basement. As you know, it's freezing down here. What about you?
Yeah, I'm the same. I didn't plan accordingly, Joey, because I'm sitting under a vent and I managed to turn on the AC for the first time in a while because it's raining outside. So there's no airflow. And as a result, I'm under a register and I'm just freezing. But aside from that, I'm good. How about you?
I'm good, man. No complaints. Had a nice long meeting with the bank today about the new mortgage. What else?
Blended, I'm guessing. Had a couple of
nice things at the cottage. What?
Is it going to be a blended mortgage or something along those
lines? Yeah, we have to blend, which is fine. I still think long-term rates are coming down. I know, there's fewer and fewer people in that camp, but a story for another time. We can talk about that on the CBP on Monday. For now, we got to get to last week's quote of the week. Most of the greatest evils that man has inflicted upon man have come through people feeling quite certain about something which, in fact, was false. That was by Bertrand Russell. And the winner is Randy, whose last name I won't mention. This week's quote, freedom is never voluntarily given by the oppressor. It must be demanded by the oppressed. If you know who that quote's from, no searching up the answer, of course. You have to post it at the bottom of the Access of Easy post in the comments section. The prize is the winner gets their next domain hosting on Mark and Easy DNS. Again, accessofeasy.com, head over. Read the newsletter. We always do the top five or six stories, depending on what the sometimes content seven. Looks like. Sometimes seven. Yeah, we do the top stories. But there's other things to talk about as well in the newsletter that we don't cover on the podcast, because otherwise we'd be here all night. And some of that stuff is pretty important, as you can guess. You know, if you listen to this show, you know that. So anyway, Len, I think we got five stories tonight to get to. Let's dive in.
Yeah, so we'll dive right into the FBI. And they're spying on all of us. And they have the banks to thank for all of this, and they're helping them out. This was in a recent hearing. The FBI director, Christopher Wray, he's been in the news quite a bit, not too recently. Well, he's admitted that the FBI has been routinely snagging the financial records of seemingly innocent Americans. And how do they get this information? Well, from the banks, of course, our friends at the banks. This gives the FBI the power to track spending habits, our travel history, and even our political donations. So can they be using the FBI as a weapon? Could they be weaponizing it? I would argue that it's already been done. It's already being used in this manner. But by getting this information, they could further weaponize the FBI. And it's not just the going after people that are deemed to be terrorists or criminals. Sadly, they're doing this even ordinary Americans as well. So remember, next time you go to the bank and you provide some information to your teller, who knows, maybe that information might land on the desk of Mr. Ray. And even when you use your credit card, the FBI, they could be tracking your spending. But don't worry, it's not all that bad news, because the FBI is also, they're in a giving mood. They're sharing these financial records with other government agencies like the IRS and the NSA. How charitable of them to spread this information, spread out the wealth. But even if you're audited or even if you're suspected of a crime, the FBI will have all the evidence they need to hammer you to the cross. So in the meantime, just enjoy your freedom while you have it, because the FBI, they are watching you. And it kind of seems like this is the prelude to a CBDC, which is a totally different topic altogether. But it just seems like that same type of surveillance and everything that comes along with CBDC, well, they're implementing it right now, but in a less efficient manner.
I don't even know what to say about this, honestly. It feels like we've had this story before, except maybe it wasn't about Chris Wray. Maybe it was about like someone else. But I mean, Len, I think there's probably some cases where people share like their bank account with their closest friends or their spouse or whatever. But when your spouse is the FBI, maybe you don't want to share that info. Okay, question for you. given the recent stuff about Nigel Farage over in the UK, do you think that it's possible that, and you and I have had this experience too, so I shouldn't just say it's Mr. Farage, but there's a number of people in the Bitcoin space who've had similar experiences where they can't get a bank account for some reason. There's some shadowy figure at the top of some risk management pyramid or structure that tells you you're too risky or they can't take on someone, you know, under some, you know, obscure umbrella. Is it possible that somewhere along the line there is coordination with governments? I mean, there's got to be, right? They're either getting that list of undesirables from, you know, FBI or equivalent agencies around the world, or there's a suggestion on who you should and shouldn't bank, what things are quote unquote risky. Without much, you know, if I had to guess anyway, obviously I've not seen one of these lists, but without much description of why there is a risk or why they need the information or why there has to be open, you know, two-way streets between the bank and the government. I don't think anyone these days views the gap between the two monoliths, you know, modern banking and government, as anything but kind of fake, porous, phony, you know, pick your word. But what do you think? Is that probably the case? You know, in the case of Farage, there's some documents out there. I doubt very much people are looking into the Canadian Bitcoiners podcast that but you know, you never know. Someone somewhere is trying to do this to certain people, certain businesses, certain industries. And to me, this looks like another example, albeit a bit, you know, a bit in the periphery. But all the same, what do you think? Is that a reasonable assumption that they're involved in that kind of risk assessment?
Do these lists get populated by just one individual working away in his basement, or are they given information to add to their list? I would think it's more of the latter. So I think that whoever's feeding them this information, and we know who it is, that they're the perpetrators of everything. They're the ones to blame. But they have a hand-in-hand relationship between the banks and governments and law officials, the law enforcement. So, you know, that's just a par for the course.
There's a lot of hand-holding, polyamorous almost, you might say. all those people in the same bed. I'm not sure I'd want to be a part of that personally.
Well,
but each their own. If it's your kink, it's your kink.
We may be on that list of the who knows. But like you said,
we all are now.
we but that is a different list altogether. Anyways, let's talk about WormGPT. And before we go any further, the ranking,
that's a five. That's a five.
You're going to give it a five. I was going to give it 3.5, maybe a four, for a couple of reasons. One, I kind of like the factor tying it into ChatGPT, but the worm thing, I like that. It almost reminds me of the video game Worm. It's a very old video game, but I like that. And so I was going to give it a 3.5 or 4 to 5. You're giving it a perfect score, which is...
I'm giving it a perfect score because I like the worm thing. But the reason I'm giving it a perfect score is not necessarily the name. On the Hacker News link, which you can see if you go to the newsletter, on accessvz.com, or if you're subscribed to it, it looks to me like one of those old ASCII graphic key generators. And I can almost hear the MIDI sound annoying my parents while I try desperately to break the latest Age of Empires expansion on my, you know, crappy Scenix laptop, you know, circa 2004. I love that kind of that like window where it's just so old school, so cypher. I think that when I think of cypherpunk stuff, that's one of the things I think of. It reminded me of that. So gets a five for me, perfect nickel.
One day I'm gonna have to show you what it's like to use the internet or any sort of online thing with a 300 baud modem. And Joey, that is freaking slow. But anyways, let's move on. 300 baud, that's going back decades. Well, the new AI tool, the Worm GPT, ranked 5 out of 5 according to Joey, is like a cyber criminal's dream come true. It could generate highly convincing fake emails personalized to the recipient, and it's increasing the chances of a success for an attack. This means that these cyber criminals out there, they could easily impersonate legitimate businesses and individuals in order to trick their victims into clicking on malicious links or providing sensitive information. So the question it comes up, how can you protect yourself from something like this? Well, you got to be careful of any emails that come in that seem out of the ordinary. If you receive something from somebody you don't know, just be careful to not start clicking on stuff, because you might end up with one of these vulnerabilities on your computer. And there are people out there that they are not too tech savvy, and they could actually implement some things. They could use a spam filter to help block out unwanted emails. A lot of these email servers have the ability to put these spam servers on, or these spam filters on. And you could also install some security suites out there if you are into antivirus or even anti-malware protection. Although I'd recommend that even some of them might be considered malware or viruses themselves. Wasn't John McAfee saying the same thing about the software that bears his name before he passed on? Anyways, you should always be careful out there whenever anything you share online, because that could be used against you for one of these, making a very convincing tool to use against you. But anyways, WormGPT, it's a new AI tool out there. It's launching a lot of these sophisticated attacks out there. And it really, it's up to you. The onus is on you to protect yourself. It's nobody else that can do it for you. Ultimately, it's on your head if you're going to be doing this. So be very careful if you're clicking on shit that's on the email. You know, it's same old stuff. Just be wary of anything that comes into your inbox.
What emails these days, I'll cop to this. I use Gmail still for my kind of main daily driver email. And there's almost nothing that makes it through the Gmail junk filter that's not junk. Like it's almost unbelievable how tightly knit that screener is. I am surprised to hear that this is causing problems for people, presuming that most people use either Gmail or whatever the Microsoft equivalent is. Used to be Hotmail, might be like Live Mail or Outlook now, I'm not sure. But like these two companies probably preside over, you know, what percentage of global email communication? 85%, 80%, something like that, something super high. And those two filters, two filter systems got to work pretty well. So what is the email here that's making it through those filters? That's really what I want to see. I'm disappointed. I don't really see a quality example here. It says, you know, there's like a dear name example, but to me, this is not something like I see these kinds of emails in my junk filter all the time. So what are the ones that are making it through the junk filter? I'm not sure. My name is not enough to get through the junk filter. All that garbage has my name on it and it never makes it through. So I'm curious as to what services are having trouble with this. It doesn't mention it there. Is it ProtonMail that's having trouble? They probably don't have a built-in spam filter. Hard to say, but all the same, you're right. It's on you. Take care. Don't click. Don't read. Don't open. PDFs are not your friend. Executables are not your friend, et cetera, et cetera. There's scripting in all sorts of different file types these days. So, you know, be careful. That's all. What else can you say?
Well, think it's these people that still use AOL and you got mail. And they're just, oh, they got some mail. And I start clicking away. And who cares what happens? With
hot singles that in my area again? Lucky day.
You know what? You're saying what could, like, nothing's really passing through your spam filter. You know what? I'm going to take it. It's a personal now mission for me. I'm going to use the Worm GPT. I'm going to start
you and the Worm. You and Rodman GPT trying to get to my inbox.
I'm going to color my hair too. I'm going to do it side by side. Then we'll go over to North Korea and play some ball with the general. Anyways, let's talk about Microsoft. And I think this is a piggyback on a story that we talked about on Access of Easy very recently. In a blog post that was published on July 17th, just this year of 2023, Microsoft reveals it has lost the control of a key that allows hackers to stealthily break into dozens of email inboxes, including those belonging to several federal government agencies. Was it last week or 2 weeks ago we talked about this?
2 weeks ago, I think.
Okay. So these hackers, they are believed to be backed by the Chinese government, which is, of course, the CCP. Obtained a Microsoft signing key that was abused to forge authentication tokens to allow them to access inboxes as if they are the rightful owners. And this allowed the hackers to read emails, send emails, and even change passwords. Microsoft said that it has blocked all actor activity related to this incident, so suggesting that the incident is over and the hackers have since lost access. However, the company is still investigating how the hackers have obtained the signing key in the first place. The incident has raised some questions about the security of Microsoft systems. I, too, have been questioning that as well. It also highlights the importance of strong authentication practices, as even a single weak link can be exploited by malicious actors. So the simple SMS doesn't really work. Use something a little bit more hardened than that. In addition to the security implications, the incident has also political ramifications. The fact that the hackers were able to target government agencies suggests that they may have been seeking sensitive information, and this could have a negative impact on national security. So Microsoft, as I mentioned, they're taking the steps necessary to improve their systems, but it's unclear if these steps will prevent any future attacks, and only time will tell if Microsoft will be able to regain the trust of their customers and partners. Probably not. In fact, they probably lost it decades ago. So yeah, so just to recap, hackers were able to target these government agencies in the US, Canada, and the UK, and they were able to access the emails dated back to 2017. Microsoft was unsure how the hackers obtained the signing key. That's very, very troubling. And they have blocked all the actor activity related to this incident. And they are obviously improving their steps and implementing some new safety measures to make sure this doesn't happen again. It probably will, though. But that's Microsoft for you. A lot of stuff going on over there. And yeah, this is just a carry-on from a previous story, so which is good to see. We have some, it's almost like a part two, and then we'll have a part three, like Godfather part three. So let's see what happens moving forward. Maybe it's the Chinese government fights back. We'll see what happens.
Do we need to return to tradition here? Without giving away too much about, you know, our employer, I remember the first ever, what I now realize was a 2FA token that I ever received. Do you remember, did you ever get a 2FA token like years and years ago, like pre-pandemic? So yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
The hardware fob.
I forgot about that.
They used to just rotate numbers, presumably the same way like Google or Authy or whatever does, right? So like, is this the answer? Do we need to return to tradition where everyone is carrying like throwback key fobs and that's the only way you can get into the account? There is no electronic key. If you lose your key fob, you're fired. You'd be sleeping in a tent. That's all there is to it. The key fob is the most important thing about your job. I forgot about that. And I was thinking about it after the show last week about like, wait a minute. 2FA is like a relatively recent phenomenon for the general public. But we had it years ago with those stupid little red and white fobs. Maybe we got to go back to that. How do we get a hold of those guys? Can we get them on the show? What are they even doing now?
Well, maybe they're part of the 10 cities because they're out of a job and they have no way to pay rent. So maybe, I don't know if we could.
Stock chart, an access of easy tradition. Let's check the stock chart. What are they down?
Yeah. So I will suggest AndOTP, A-N-D-O-T-P is an open source two-factor authentication that works with everything out there that, you know, Google, Twitter, you name it. So it's easy to work. You can back your stuff up with it. It's password protected. There's so many goodies that come along with this. That's something I would recommend as a two-factor authentication, not an SMS. And you know what? The one that you're mentioning there from our workplace or former workplace, it's that was funny stuff. I totally forgot about that. I just
pulled up an article here, and the question, it's on Info Security Magazine, which I think we've read for this this show in the past. Hard, soft, or smart, evaluating 2FA options. And this article is from 2012. So that's about the same time that I was seeing these things all over the place. I didn't have mine at that time, but you know, a couple years later I did.
Yeah, same. So, same. Yeah, it was probably 3 or 4 years later.
Fun. Very fun. Mm-hmm.
Well, Canadian news is unfortunately being blocked in Canada. On July 8th, 2023, Meta, formerly known as Facebook, actually started to block some articles from Canadian publishers on their platform. This is according to a new law that was passed by the Canadian government. It's all just knee-jerk reaction. And the law, known as the Online News Act, requires tech giants like Meta to pay publishers to use their news content. So Meta's arguing that the law is unfair and it will stifle innovation. And the company's also said that it's concerned about the precedent that the law sets, as it could lead to similar laws being passed in other countries. The Canadian government, of course, they're the ones that pass it. They're defending this law. They're saying it's necessary to ensure that the news publishers are fairly compensated for their work. And the government has also said that the law will help ensure the public has access to high quality news. Looks like it's getting blocked. So this is pretty funny stuff. So the blocking of Canadian news by Meta has been met by criticism by both publishers and users. Publishers have argued that the blocking is a form of censorship and it's going to hurt business. And users are also expressing frustration because they can't access their news. And it's unclear how long this blockade is going to last. It could happen a day, a few more hours, a few years, who the heck knows. But they're willing to negotiate with the Canadian government. This is according to officials from Meta. And the Canadian government said they're not willing to change the law. So looks like they're a blockade here, and there's going to be no way for some of these users to get access to Canadian news. One way to get around it, I would suggest, is use a VPN. If you're hard-pressed to get your news from stuff like Facebook and you don't want to go directly to CBC or CTV or whatever news site you want to try to go to, install a VPN. And then that way you're going to get around this. And it gives you a lot of different goodies as well. If you're geo-locked for a few other things, maybe Netflix or something else, you could get access to a whole bunch of new shows. Just my suggestion. Of course, take that up if you want. It's just it's with a grain of salt. So it's too bad this is being done with Meta. It's going to be done soon with Google. I'm pretty sure they're going to do the same thing. And a whole bunch of other of these giants is going to also follow suit. So this is not just going to be a Meta thing blocking these Canadian sites from getting access by Canadians. It's going to be done by a lot more moving forward. And then there's going to be a real standoff between these giants and the Canadian government.
There is no censorship here. There is only whining, pearl clutching, hand wringing, and stupidity. And, you know, I won't take those in order or even take them all for this podcast. But if Canadians want Canadian news, they can still go to the websites. The problem is the content is so full of shit and that the websites are so impossible to navigate and almost comically behind the times in terms of what you'd expect to see, both aesthetically and from a navigation perspective, that no one uses them. Everything is paywalled. Everyone uses archive.is anyway or 12-foot ladder or whatever. Nobody pays for the news. Why should Facebook and Google have to pay for the latest, you know, whiny Bruce Arthur piece, you know, when that sports writer decides to stumble into politics or stumble into culture or stumble into economics or, you know, virology or whatever other nonsense that guy has time to waste? Torstar is maybe the largest print publication in Canada. It's worth nothing. The stock is worth almost nothing and on its way down. All these other major media corporations have just gone through monster sets of layoffs. Believe me, okay? These guys were in trouble before Google, Facebook, you know, et al. Decided that they're not going to pay for clicks to have the stuff posted. Me and you make content. And one of the things I think we've talked about over the years, although we've disagreed on many things, one of the things we agree on is the more places we get seen, the more likely people come back for more. And it's our job to bring people in. If something gets shared with somebody and it's something they like, then it's our responsibility to make sure the next thing they see is inviting enough that they keep coming back and subscribe directly to the YouTube channel, directly to the Twitter feed, directly to the Discord, whatever. News media in Canada hasn't done that for a long time. Well, Joey, how do you know that? I don't know, you guys. Check and see how much the subsidies are here. None of them are floating on their own merits anymore and haven't for some time. This is completely insane from all people involved except the big corporations who, by the way, you and me skewer on this show all the time for their lack of care, trustlessness, you know, you name it. But at the end of the day, they're businesses. And guess what? Much the same way as like Nike.com no longer ships to Canadian Canadian retail and also most Canadian vendors. I know this because I buy sports stuff all the time because I'm still playing sports. The market is too small to care about all these dumb laws, dumb taxes, dumb rules, dumb flaming hula hoops you have to jump through. This is another example. But they're just not going to do it. You know, plus Len, at the end of the day, you know, how many Canadians did we say were, you know, hard up for cash? It was 11 million
individuals million.
In households. So that's about 30%, let's say, if you go on the lower end of the household guess. Those people aren't paying for news no matter how you slice it. And so these news media orgs need to find ways to make money. And Google and Facebook are going, wow, we're not paying to keep your lights on, guys. And I don't blame them, honestly. I think it's a good move from them and short-sighted by basically everyone else involved.
I forgot the Toronto Star was a publicly traded company, and I just took
look at that chart.
A
precipitous fall is not harsh enough language to describe what's going on that chart. Candle is red.
I would like to put that on an overlay about the U.S. dollar and since the Federal Reserve came into inception and see if there's any sort of a connection between the two of this, because it's basically starting from the top left and ending at the bottom right, both of them in terms of the U.S. dollar purchasing power and in terms of the Toronto Star stock price. It's incredible how far it's fallen, and you know what? It continues to do so. It's been stagnant for, well, couple of days. So a couple of months ago, it was nice. A little bit higher.
If I look at this chart over five years, it's gone from 419, let's call it 2015, to 74 cents today.
I'm looking at a maximum. I'm even going further back 15, 20 years, and it's just, it's a funny fall.
Down from almost $30. Like, imagine. Yeah. Like, this is, so again, like we're kind of going long here, but I would just suggest to people that If you look at this in a vacuum, you may find yourself feeling sorry for Toronto Star. Well, like Facebook's using our news to bring people to their website. No, what you have here is a multi-decade failure to adjust. And what you've done is found yourself ossified, calcified in an old business model, and now you're begging for pennies while the world passes you by. I'm not interested in supporting that. And I hope those companies all end up in, you know, smoldering piles of rubble over the next 5 or 6 years. I suspect that's going to be the case for many of them. Certainly Torstar, among others that think they are the Globe or the Post, and are, you know, very, very, very far from those flagship publications.
It's an incredible lineage over there. They are one of the big players in Toronto, and they, you know, I don't want to get too much into that. This is more ancient.
We can say that for the newspaper podcast that we're starting every Friday, 3 p.m.
Yeah, let's do that. Here's the press. Python, this thing, it's a real, you know, once they bite into you, be careful, because there's a malicious Python packages that they could be found out there, and they're actually targeting Windows users on PyPI. And these malicious packages are programs that are purposely designed to harm machines or the data that they process. And it could easily be hidden and entered into unsuspecting systems through phishing email, hijack websites, or even legitimate software repositories. And it was found that 6 different malicious packages were noticed targeting Windows users that were discovered on PyPI. Now, PyPI, or the Python Package Index, is a repository of software for the Python programming language. And these were found by Prisma Cloud researchers back in March of 2023. And these packages were designed to steal personal data, application credentials, and cryptocurrency wallet information. And I'm wondering if Peter McSee out there would maybe want to have these guys sponsor his show, given his lineage over there. But anyways, the malicious packages, they could have severe consequences out there, such as secretly stealing the data, as mentioned, and creating system interruptions and even gaining control of the entire system. That's incredible if they could do that, because then you totally lose everything over there and it's basically running the show. So be careful out there. It's very hard for you to actually defend yourself, but they are recommending that software developers and organizations, they got to prioritize their software security in a development process, and they have to implement some robust security measures such as code reviews and automated testing and penetration soft testing to identify that the remediation vulnerabilities before they are deployed. So it's really nothing we can do. It's hard for us to do. It's more to do with the software developers out there to make sure that this doesn't land on our doorstep. But this could be nasty, nasty stuff, because they could take control of our system and drain our wallets if we have any wallets associated with our computers. Who the heck does that these days? MetaMask? I don't know. There's got to be some out there. And we'll probably read about those stories in not too distant future on the CVP. So maybe the Crypto King is involved with that. But yeah, what are your thoughts?
Access of Easy, a great place to find out which hardware, wallets you shouldn't be having on your browser. Mutiny, MetaMask, et cetera, et cetera. I want to give some kudos here to Unit 42. I will be the first to admit that my understanding of some of these things is a little bit lacking when we start doing the research for the show, because I'm not a programmer, script kid, none of that stuff. But most of the time, I can spend some time with it, read it once or twice, read the hard stuff a couple times, whatever, and have something smart to say about it or compare it to something that I know. I almost went to GPT for this one, because this is a really in-depth description of all the different surface areas, all the different angles. Tons of stuff. There's a table of contents, man. Like this is a great article. And I hope that there's people listening to this show who will go to the link, unit42.paloaltonetworks.com. Palo Alto was, the firm that discovered the problem. Eh? This is really good stuff. There's tons of stuff going on here. And at the end, it gives you a solution, ways you can do this. Now, mind you, part of it is a paid service from PAN. But all in all, most of the time, the commentary that we see is like sometimes maybe written by a chatbot. There's no way this was written by a chatbot. This is written by an expert. And so I'm not going to add anything to what you just said. I definitely can't do this justice. I hope everyone goes to check this article out. Spend 20 minutes reading it. See what you think.
Yeah, agreed. It's very in-depth. So it's not going to be you're going to sit there for 10 minutes and read it. It's really, really in-depth. And it even provides some of the code as well. So it's good if you are a Python coder, because you can digest this and understand what the problems out there. And yeah, it's a cruel world out there. And they're trying to get all your data and all your, well, altcoins on your your software wallets.
Steer clear, my friends and enemies. Anyway, take care of yourself. That was Access of Easy 307. We'll see you next week with 308. Be well and be good.
Yeah, take care.